Welcome to Step Into the Story. Incredible conversations of how the Bible changes lives, changes families, and changes communities across the globe. And here's your host, Phil Tuttle of Walk Through the Bible.
Welcome to Step Into the Story. Each time we get together, I get to sit down with a special guest and we explore the intersection of their story and God's story. And sometimes it's the overall arc of their life. Sometimes it's a time, a season in their life where there was just a particularly intense need and there was a deeper connection formed with God and His Word. And today, it's my joy to introduce you to a dear friend of mine, a board member at Walk Through the Bible, but our relationship goes so much deeper than that. Judy Huber, welcome to Step Into the Story.
Thank you.
Well, Judy, I don't know how long we've known each other, but it's been a while now, and I think you and Ron were probably involved with Walk Through the Bible, maybe even longer than I have been as faithful supporters. But let's not jump ahead in the story. Some parts of this I don't even know, but tell me about growing up Judy Huber. Where were you raised? Tell me about your family, that part of the story first.
Well, I was born and raised in a little town called Laverne, California. And I have two older brothers. One has passed away, so there were three children. And my parents moved from Oklahoma to California in the late 1939, 1940s.
Wow.
And that's where I grew up.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And
wow.
It was a sweet family and a sweet town. The town was maybe 3,000 people. And of course, it was during the citrus era. So there were orange groves, lemon groves all around. And my dad was a foreman for one of the growers. And so our home was in the orange grove.
Interesting.
And so, yeah. And so it was a darling little house. And it was probably on 25 acres of citrus. And it was just a fun time to grow up. I had free reign of 25 acres.
Wow. Wow. I did not know there was a Laverne, California. My father's middle name was Laverne. So there,
oh, yeah.
I doubt
yeah.
he even ever knew that. He was Gail Laverne, G-A-I-L. It's like, we're not sure that how that happened, but he said it was rough in World War II being named Gail Laverne. And yeah. He just went by George when he was fighting in France and into
That's
Germany.
Funny.
Wow.
That's funny.
So,
yeah, well, Laverne is about 30 miles southeast of L.A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It hasn't been just swallowed up now as another suburb?
No, it's still Laverne. It's grown considerably, but they had boundaries, so it's kept them small all these years because they were surrounded by other towns.
Okay. So growing up there and then kind of with that as the foundation— a solid family growing up, as much orange juice as you could personally squeeze at will every morning. Pretty great way to grow up. Talk about your life from that point on. Where'd you go from there?
Well, it was pretty simple. I mean, it was pretty routine. You know, I graduated from high school there. And shortly after that, I met my husband, who was born and raised in Tucson, Arizona. And Ron came to California to go to school at Azusa Pacific. And he left for a year when his father passed away. And then he came back. And when he came back, I was going to the same church then that he attended whenever he was there. Our paths cross, and I didn't meet him when he was there because I wasn't attending that church. So that's how we met, and 6 months later, we got married.
Okay. So was it love at first sight or second sight? Or, I mean, was it mutual, or did somebody have to do some persuading? How did that go down?
There was no persuasion. We both knew it immediately.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. pretty exciting time.
Wow. And God blessed you with a family. Talk about that. Kids and now grandkids. How many?
Yes. Seven.
Seven grandkids. How many kids?
No greats.
No greats. But
Two daughters.
Two daughters. That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And so you and Ron did something not just every couple can do. You work together.
Oh, yes, we did.
Which is something I don't think Ellen and I could do. Not everyone can do that. Talk about the businesses that you've had together through the years.
Well, that's pretty funny. So, yes, we did. We opened a business in 1978 called Time Systems. And we did time management training. And we had a paper system that we put together. And we would market that system and teach concepts and ideas of time management. So we started.
Judy, I don't know if you know this or not. Probably you were the one who facilitated this. But when I came to walk through the Bible in 92 full time, I went through that train. All new employees did, and we all used the same time management. The big leather binders with the zippers and the.
Yes.
Wow. And that grew, right? I mean,
it did. And we did not intend to work together. That was just not on the screen. That was not going to happen. And as God does his magic all the time, it required both of us at the same time. And Ron did not leave his job. He had a job. I had a job, and we opened this business, and we thought we could hire people to run it. And they did a very nice job, but Ron thought, I wonder what would happen if I was there. Mm. And that's where his heart was. So he went, and then I followed shortly after that. And we didn't know that we weren't supposed to be able to work together. We just did it because it had to be done. And fortunately, our personalities are completely opposite. And so it worked out pretty well for almost 20 years before we sold it and retired.
Mm. And so you sold it probably at a good time as all of that industry was going digital.
Yes.
And
yes.
Good move.
Yes.
Good move.
Yes, we sold it in 1995. And we always say God got us in that business and God got us out. Because in 1995 was just the time whenever all of that was going computerized and all of those things. So everything that we were teaching, we now all of us do it on our phones.
Yeah, sure.
Now, all of that was part of our paper system.
Mm. Wow. Wow.
And it did grow. It grew really quickly. And when we sold, we had about 200 employees and 16 offices across the U.S. and Canada.
That's amazing. So you used the term retired, but you didn't really retire because you jumped into another business. Tell me about the go-kart business. I giggle every time you and I talk about that because go-kart to me was somebody had four spare lawnmower wheels and we nailed them on a piece of plywood and we headed down Mark Lane next to our house, the steepest incline there was in Normal, Illinois, and it was a very dangerous trip and there was a curb at the bottom followed by Sugar Creek. But when you say you sold go-karts, it's a very different piece of machinery than that. What are you talking about?
It was a different piece of machinery. Well, I retired, but Ron did not. And he was already in the racing community because he was racing vintage NASCARs with a group of retired people, men. And so he was already into that, and he somehow connected with the manufacturer out of Italy and signed a contract to bring in go-karts and sell Tony carts. They were a Tony cart, and they came in from Italy. He wanted me to come down there and work with him with the go-kart business. And I said, no, I'm retired. I've got six grandkids, and I don't want to do that. And he never let up asking me to come down there and help him run the go-kart business.
So in so many ways, I mean, success in business, a happy marriage, blessed with a couple of daughters, and now grandkids have arrived. And man, who wouldn't want that life? I'm sure you had your challenges, but so much to be happy about. It's amazing how quickly a life can change. And especially in your story, tell us about October 29th, 2004. Started as kind of an ordinary day, I guess, but tell us about that day.
Yeah. Well, Ron had started the go-kart business, and there was a big race, a national race in Las Vegas, Nevada. And he had put together a race team, and he was going. He was actually here for about 4 days, and he was going to entertain the Italians that came over for the race. And so he was busy doing all of those kinds of things. And so the morning that he left, which was actually on a Monday morning of that same week, you know, Ron traveled all the time with business, and so it was nothing unusual for him to go. And he got up, got himself ready, and I got up later, and I was still in my robe and PJs. And, you know, we just kind of said, bye, I'll see you later. And that was pretty much it. And for whatever reason, I don't know, it was very unusual, but he had the back door had closed, and I hurried down the hall and went out to the garage to say goodbye to him one more time. And so he said, come over here. So I went over to the truck where he was, and he rolled down the window, and he gave me a sweet kiss and told me how much he loved me. And he drove off to go pick up his guest and head to Las Vegas. And that was on Monday. And I did talk to him through the week because our grandson, Andrew, was playing baseball. So Tuesday night, he called me to see how Andrew was doing. And I was able to, Andrew was up for bat, and I was able to call the game and the strikes to Ron on the telephone. And whenever Andrew made his hit, he got to third base. Ron heard the crack of the bat and said, oh, I'm so proud of him. And that was our last phone call. That was our last conversation that we had together that night on Tuesday. And then Thursday morning, I think it was, I got a call. It was a normal day. I had finished breakfast, and I had some plans in place for the rest of the day. And I got a phone call from our race manager, and he told me that Ron had had an accident and that he had hit his head and that they had called an ambulance. And I thought, so I told him, I said, well, if he doesn't wake up shortly, you call me right back because I want to know. And I thought, you know, Ron had fallen a lot and hit his head and always bounced right back up. So I was expecting him to just come to and be fine. And it wasn't but maybe 5 minutes that he called me back, and he said the EMTs would like to speak with you. And so they were asking me about his medication and all of those things. And he had not come to. And I could hear them in the background trying to get him to answer them. And there was no answer. So I asked our race manager if he would stay with him. I said, don't let him go by himself. You go with him, please. And he said, I will. And so then I didn't know what to do because I thought, you know, I'm here. He's in Las Vegas. He told me I didn't need to be there in the first place because I said I would go with him. And he said, ah, there's no need. And I thought, if I get there, he'll be in bed eating Jell-O and be really upset that I made the trip to see him, you know, that one of those things. So I thought about it a bit. And I called both of my girls and I said, I think I need to go. And so they thought they needed to go with me. So we were able to make reservations and we got on two different flights. And I had called my brother who lived in Laverne and I told him what had happened. And he said, sis, I can be there the same time you are. And I said, no, don't worry about it. We'll be fine. And so when we got to the airport, we were checking in at the gate and I asked if my daughter, Sherry, if there was an open flight for her, that she could go on the flight with us. And I told him why we were trying to do this. And he was in the hospital, et cetera, et cetera. And there was a gentleman behind me that said, she can have my seat.
Wow.
And he gave up his seat so the girls and I could be on the same flight. And when he did that, I called my brother and I told him we're on the flight. We're all three on the flight. And he said, I can be there same time you are. And I said, okay, I'll see you there.
Good.
And so we got on our flight and we got to the hospital and my brother walked in about 5 minutes after me. And I went to the desk and I said, I'm Judy Huber and I'd like to see my husband. He's a patient here. And they told me that I would need to see the physician first. The doctor wanted to speak to me first. And I thought, I said, well, I just want to see him. And he said, I know, but the doctor needs to talk to you first. And so they put us into a family room and we sat there for a little while. And the most interesting thing happened is this lady came in. I did not recognize her right away. And she said, oh my goodness. She said, I saw the name on the intake paper. And she thought, I thought for sure this couldn't be the Ron Huber that I know. And I looked at her and she told me her name. And she said, I worked for you until I moved. And she was a lovely, lovely lady. And she said, I don't normally work this side of the hospital. The lady that works is on is sick, so I'm here to cover for her. And so they would she her job was to coordinate rooms for people that came in and just kind of look after us. And she called him my Ron Huber, because when we had our business, what we would do is we would help to pay for education if they decided to go back to college. And she said, if it weren't for you, I wouldn't be here because of you, I was able to finish my education and get my degree. And I'll always be thankful to both of you for that. And it was just a sweet moment of a familiar face.
Yes.
In a time of great need. And Ron's accident was because he was on a Segway. You know what a Segway is?
Yeah.
You ride
both two-wheeled heels.
And he was at the race and he was going to take some passes up to the front gate. So he was on the Segway and he went to turn left and the Segway went to the right and it spun. And when it spun him off and he hit the right side of his head and it fell. So at any rate, the doctor came in and told us about his injuries and what they had done. Because he came in alone, they did go ahead and do a surgery to let the pressure off of the brain. But it wasn't good. And so I did get to go in and see Ron. And my brother went in with me. And he had the most peaceful look on his face. And my brother said to me, he said, Judy, he's already gone. Mm-hmm. You know, you could just tell. But you know, they had him on life support and his heart was strong. And they worked with him for overnight. But the interesting thing is the word was out that he'd had an accident and he was in the hospital. And people started showing up from all over. Our friends, our dear friends came from Scottsdale to be there with us. And there was probably 25 or 30 people in the waiting room just sitting with us for almost 24 hours. And at any rate, it was a special time. And Tim Griffin was there. He was a pastor at the time for Motor Racing Outreach, which we had been involved in. And so he was there as our support system. And finally, they did a test to let me know that there was no brain activity and that, you know, we had a decision to make. And so, of course, the decision was a hard one. And they wanted me to make it earlier, and I just couldn't until they had that test, you know, to let me know there's no brain activity. He's gone. And so at that point, we decided that we would go ahead and take him off the life support. And the doctor said, I don't believe he'll take another breath. And so there was about 20 of us that went into the room and circled the bed and sang Amazing Grace. And then they turned off the life support and he did not take another breath. Mm. He was gone.
Really?
So I often tell people life can change in a heartbeat. It's that quick how life changes. Like, you know, it was sudden. I wasn't even thinking that that was a possibility. I just kept thinking that he would make it. He always pulled through. And why wouldn't he this time? He was 59 years old and had a lot to do. You know, he had a plan. And so that was the start of a whole new life for me personally. And God was faithful, has been faithful, and continues to be faithful every day, every day.
Mm-hmm. You know, you've shared with me that Ron was really quite a daredevil. There wasn't much he wouldn't try. And to think that, I mean, that was probably one of the tamest things he'd ever done.
Absolutely.
And to think that that would be... That would be when he lost his life. That's just,
I know. That's very ironic, isn't it?
Yeah. And so
he drove race cars. You know, he drove race cars. He had his pilot's license. He did all kinds of crazy things for sure. Mm-hmm.
So we want to continue this conversation in a minute, but as Judy, you just said, life is fragile and it can change in an instant. Scripture describes it. It says it's like a vapor. That 1 minute it's there and then poof, where did it?
It's gone.
Where did it go? And if you're listening to this today and you're in a season of loss, or maybe this is churning up memories of when you lost somebody really special to you, I hope you'll listen to this. We have a resource at Walk Through the Bible I think can be a great encouragement to you. And then we'll come back, and Judy, let's continue this conversation, because far from the end, as you said it so clearly, and that began a whole new season in my life. We'll talk about that in just a second.
When a master artist is creating a sculpture, he has a plan in mind for the stone. The skilled sculptor knows what he wants to achieve, and he uses his chisel to create the work of art he envisioned before he even picked it up. This is the lesson of Chiseled, becoming the masterpiece God created you to be, a 6-session Bible study from Walk Through the Bible. Chiseled is based on the life of Simon Peter and how God crafted him into the man and leader that God always wanted him to be. In God's hands, anyone can become a masterpiece. God's work in Peter's life shows how he can work in our lives too, to lovingly shape and sculpt us into the likeness of his son, Jesus. God will chip away everything in us that doesn't look like Jesus, making us into a living masterpiece that will forever reflect the beauty and glory of the artist himself. Find out more about Chiseled at walkthrough.org/chiseled.
Well, welcome back to Step Into the Story and my conversation today with a dear friend, Judy Huber. And, we just talked about when Judy, back in 2004, had to say goodbye to her husband, Ron, after a lot of years of really sweet marriage together. And Judy, you just said that, with that decision to remove him from life support, and literally he didn't breathe another breath. And, you know, you were blessed even in the details of getting there, deciding to go, the extra seat on the plane, your brother being there, your friends. I mean, there's a lot of support around you, and yet that was your husband and only your husband. So what happened after that? I mean, I know I've walked enough folks through this, and I've lost enough people close to me, my mom, my dad, my stepmom, my sister died way too young. And I think most of us know that feeling, and you're buoyed up as all the people are around, and God gives special grace at the time of loss. But that's just the beginning of grief. Where did the story go from there?
Well, as you said, as long as people were around me and with me, I felt I was doing really well. But whenever they all went home and started their life, my life, I didn't even know what that was going to look like. I just couldn't imagine my life without Ron. Never in my wildest dream. I knew he probably would pass before me, because men typically do, but not at that stage of our lives. I thought we had another 10, 15, 20 years together. Mm-hmm. And so that was the shock. It was rough. It was, I can't sugarcoat it. It was rough. And it's like, I have been a Christian since I was 18 years old, whenever I accepted Christ as my Savior. And I knew he loved me. I knew God loved me. But I had no idea how much he loved me. And I cried out many mornings. I would wake up and say, Lord, do we have to do this again today? I can't do this. And he was there. God was there with me and helped me every single day, every single step I took. And, I think it's an interesting thing for me personally, whenever I lost Ron, it was like, I did not know who I was. You know, who am I?
Yeah.
I grew up being the child of Jude Miller, Jude and Pearl Miller. That was my identity. I married Ron, and then I was Mrs. Ron Huber for 39 years. And now that's gone. Who am I? And what am I supposed to be doing? I've had a great life, and we did a lot of fun and exciting things. Ron was ADHD, so, and dyslexic. So there was a lot going on in our lives. And it was busy and loud and fun. It was a lot of fun. But without that, it's like, okay, it's quiet around here.
And your girls were adults by this point too, right?
My girls were adults, and they were grieving the loss of their dad. And our grandchildren, even the youngest, they were all grieving losing their papa. So it was like, who do I share my grief with? Because I felt like I couldn't put that on the shoulder of my girls, because they were having their own issues. And the hardest thing for them was to leave me alone. Whenever my family all left, the girls came in and they stayed with me for probably a week. And it was really hard for them to leave me, but they had to because they had families. I wanted them to, and I needed that time alone to figure out, okay, what's this going to be? But, you know, you lose your self-confidence, and I think it's because I knew that Ron always had my back. Like if I had a flat tire, I knew who to call, you know, all those kinds of things. And it was really interesting. I think the first time I went out for an appointment, I think it was I can't remember what it was for, but it was like, I've been there a lot, but I couldn't figure out how to get there. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh my gosh, how do I get there? You just, I can't describe it to you, but you just lose your confidence of knowing what you can do and what you can't do. And, you know, over the years, I know how to change a tire. I don't want to, but now I know. I mean, you just have to, you have a whole different outlook that, you know, this is my responsibility, but I'm still not alone because God is there every single day. But, you know, I just cried out to God, okay, what is it that you want me to do? What am I supposed to be doing? And finally, I just said, okay, Lord, whatever it is, I'll do it. And that changed my life, totally changed my life.
You know, Judy, you shared with me part of you asking God, well, now what do I do? I mean, you had this business and you hadn't been involved in with a day-to-day basis in it. And but now, I mean, Ron's gone and you show up. Tell us about the reception you got when you walked into your business for the first time after Ron's death, and then just how God unfolded all that. I love this story.
It's a wild story. You know, after Ron passed away, I thought, well, I'll just have to close the business. What do I know? I don't know anything about go-karts. I don't want to know anything about go-karts. I don't need to know anything about go-karts. But God has such a funny sense of humor. It's like I said, no, Ron asked me to come down there and help him run that go-kart business more than once. And I said, no, I'm retired and I'm going to play with my grandkids. And so 2 weeks after he had passed away, I thought, okay, I'll go down there. And I was prepared to close it and tell the employees, we only had four, that, you know, I think I'm going to have to close it. So I went down to the offices, and he had offices were up front, and in the back was a 10,000 square foot warehouse. So everything was fine whenever I was saying hello to everybody until I went to the warehouse and I opened up that door. And whenever I looked down through that warehouse, it was go-karts in boxes stacked from the floor to about 10 feet up, as far back as you could see. And I was so mad at Ron, I slammed that door shut. I turned to our little assistant and I said, Anita, I am so mad at Ron right now. And she said, I know, I am too. But, you know, besides the go-karts, you know, Ron had probably 10 to 12 vintage race cars sitting back there that he had restored, and they were in prime condition. There was a hot rod. There were other cars, and all the motors and all of that stuff that went with those race cars. It was overwhelming. But it's like I walked up and I got in my car and I thought, what in the world was he doing? Because it's like it's all in boxes. And I thought, I don't know what to do, but I think I'm going to have to, I think I'm going to have to run a go-kart shop until I can sell it. So I did run a go-kart shop. But you know what was interesting is Ron had just started his business. And so that was his first shipment of carts that came in from Italy. and they were still in the boxes. And he was in Las Vegas for the races. And what happened whenever he had his accident, those young men that he had brought in for the different series of races, they were amazing. Those young men, they won every race in their category. So whenever that race was over, everybody knew about Ron Huber. They knew about his faith, and they knew who I was, and they knew who Tony Kart was. And Tony Kart hadn't been in the U.S. for some time. So anyway, I called my advisor, our dear friend Jay Snyder, and I said, Jay, I just went down there. Do you know how many go-karts are in that warehouse? He said, no. And I said, what's from the front to the back, from the bottom to 10 feet tall? He said, oh my gosh. I said, I'm going to have to sell them. And so he said, I'll help you. And so he came by and looked over the situation and said, who do you have here that can help you? And I said, we have a race manager and he knows a lot about go-karts. And we had a guy working on motors and a couple of other employees. And so began my race car career, my Tony Kart go-kart race career. It was amazing. And I cried. I didn't want to do it. And I cried. I wanted to be with my grandbabies. But I prayed and prayed. And I thought, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing for the time being. And the first thing that I had to do, he passed away in November, and the first thing that I had to do was to go to Chicago in January for the big go-kart meet every year to bring the new carts for the next selling season. That's where they showed them and what was going to be available. And so our race manager, his name was Cliff, he said, I said, Cliff, I don't think we can do that. And he said, we can do it. He said, I've done it. He said, I know what to do. And so he built a crate that we hung our go-karts in and shipped them. And we got on the plane and went to Chicago. And the first night there, I cried and cried and cried. I thought, what in the world am I doing? And the next morning, we had to build out our space. And so everybody, it's a man's world, right? So go-karting is a man's world. Mm-hmm. And here's Anita and I and Cliff. And Cliff didn't take no for an answer, and he believed more in me than I did. And I said, Cliff, I don't think I can help you. He said, yes, you can. And he said, you and Anita are going to put the carts together. I said, Cliff. He said, no, you are. I'll show you. It's easy. And so he showed us how to put the carts together. And of course, we didn't have to screw them really tight because they weren't going to be on the ground for any time. But they displayed nicely. And we had a nice display and got everything all set up. And Cliff had me up on a ladder hanging our go-kart sign. I mean, can you imagine? It was amazing. It was just really funny. So the next day, whenever the show opened, I told him, I said, Cliff, give me a list of names and let me go around and introduce myself to people. He said, okay. So he gave me their names of this go-kart guy, and where they are and all those kinds of things. So I walked around to the very first one and I was looking for so-and-so and I'd like to chat with him for a little bit. And so he came forward and I said, I'm Judy Huber. And that's all I got out. He says, oh, we know who you are. He said, we've watched you put your space together all weekend. So that's how it started. And then from there, I had to put together a team. So I had a team of about 20, starting from age 5 to 25 on different levels. And we went racing. I traveled to all the go-kart races and we went racing.
Wow.
So I grew it. Ron had 5 distributors and whenever I closed the business because you couldn't make any money on it, I had 35 distributors and we had won the national titles, East and West, in several different categories. And it was a good time to say, I did it. And now I can go at peace. Mm. But I can tell you what I learned from that. That's whenever I found my confidence, because I knew the concepts and the theories of running a business. And they worked for go-kart just like they did for anything else. And so it was very, very energizing for me. As much as I didn't want to be there, I now see why God had me there for 2 years. I did the go-kart business for 2 years before I closed it.
Mm-hmm. So when you said, God, I don't know what you have for me next, that was a surprise. And then there's been other surprises of the ministries that you got mm-hmm. involved with. I know there's three that are real close to your heart. Tell mm-hmm. us about those, will you?
I'm on the board with Center for Arizona Policy in Arizona, and we work with our legislatures to get those laws in the state of Arizona for our Judeo-Christian beliefs. I'm on the board for Phoenix Seminary here in Arizona, which I do love the seminary and what they're doing for teaching the Christian education that they're putting out there. It's very, very phenomenal. And of course, Walk Through the Bible is one of my favorite organizations, for sure.
Mine too. We have that in common. You know, Judy, that your involvement with Walk Through the Bible, I mean, that was something you and Ron shared. And I've walked through this with different donors of ours. And for some, it's like, no, that was ours together. And I can't imagine doing that all by myself. And yet you chose, I mean, you got more deeply involved with Walk Through the Bible. Why did you do that?
Well, I'd been praying and asking God, what do you want me to do? And I'll say yes. And so when that process began, it was an interesting process. I was slow before I got back into the saddle with Walkthrough, but I made that choice, and it was a easy choice to make.
Mm-hmm. And Judy, I know that, I mean, you've done a lot more than write checks, make donations. We've traveled together. I think about our adventures in the Middle East. Talk about that a minute.
Oh my gosh. I will never, ever forget that. That was such a special, special time. Gosh, and I was not prepared for what I was going to see. I mean, I understood in my head the concept, but my heart and my head were not engaged at the same time. And whenever I got there, for one thing, I got on the plane and I thought, what am I doing? I am going to... Amman, Jordan, what am I doing? And I arrived, everything was well, and it was just the most amazing thing. And I think what I liked the most was visiting with everyone there, listening to their stories, and watching them worship, and their need and desire for the information and the projects that Walkthrough provides them. And their attitudes were so, and their hearts for God were, they're just on fire for the Lord. And it was just an amazing thing. And I will honestly tell you that the first morning, I really didn't want to, I'm still a little bit nervous when I'm someplace alone and I have to walk into a room by myself. Mm-hmm. I'm better at it, but I'm still a little bit hesitant. And this was all new to me. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just wait for about an hour when they're done and I'll slip in the back. But I came in.
Well, anyway. You barely be noticed with your blonde hair. I mean, yeah. You know, nobody will know
That's
you're visiting.
The other thing. Yeah. So anyway, I did go in and, you know, they sang and worshiped for an hour before you began to teach. Mm-hmm. And it was all in Arabic. So all I could do was listen, but not much participation, right? So the second morning, whenever I woke up, I thought, well, I'm not sure. I don't think I'm going to go. And then I did. I walked in late, and it was a little bit better. And then the third morning, for sure I wasn't going to go. I thought, no, I can't do that. I'm supposed to go. I'm going. And the third morning, I realized that I could worship in Arabic. I had no idea. Because of their love for Jesus, and their worship time was so real and so precious, it ministered to me in Arabic. It was amazing.
Isn't it amazing to see the hunger of people who didn't get to go to a place like Phoenix Seminary, and yet they're they're leading groups of people, and to take a simple tool. I don't remember which Bible character we were studying that particular week, but just life on life, and to see them grab that, and it's been translated into Arabic, and then off they go, and the multiplication starts.
And to sit down with them one-on-one and have a conversation with them and learn their story and hear what God's been doing in their life was such an encouragement to me. It's like, oh my gosh, my life is simple, you know, compared to what they've experienced.
Yeah.
So different, so different. But it was an amazing time for sure.
So it was not long after that. I don't know the exact time sequence of this, but I had my eye on you as a potential board member for a while, and, you know, was told, well, we've asked her before, and she's always said no. And you know, different board members say, what about that woman who shared about her trip to the Middle East North Africa conference? She was amazing. And I'm like, I hear she's trying to get off of boards, not onto boards. And yet you said yes to the opportunity to serve on our board. Why? And are you glad you did?
Oh, I am so glad I did. I think it's because that I know that you are teaching God's truths. All of the products that you produce, they are directly from the Word of God, and you are teaching and preaching God's truths all around the world. And that's something I wanted to be involved with, because sometimes there's not much truth in some organizations, but they're out there for a different reason. But Walkthrough is serious about reaching millions of people. And once I got involved with the character series, I saw how fast it goes around and gets translated into 25 or 30 languages, and off it goes, and it just keeps going. And I know that it's God's truth and God's will that Walkthrough is out there and participating in this, and I just want to be a part of that.
Well, you're a big part of it. You know, Judy, I can introduce you a number of different ways, but one of my favorite titles for you is You Are My Wife's Hero. And I know you and Ellen recently shared Sunday brunch together out in Scottsdale.
Yeah.
She gets together with some college friends. I'm telling you, that's going to be an annual appointment for her. She came back just
so
encouraged. But, you know, we have those conversations, I guess every couple does sometimes, of eventually one of us likely is going to go first. And, you know, and she's like, I know you'll last about 5 minutes before, you know, you can't boil water without my help. And I'm like, well, hon, I would want you to remarry too. And she's just like, nope. She goes, I'm not raising another one. And she goes, I'm going to be Judy Huber. And, you are a strong person. And in addition to the official board roles and other roles that you've got in your own local church there in Scottsdale, God is more and more opening up opportunities for you to minister to other widows. And if you're listening to this today and you just lost your husband, I mean, Judy is available. She's a woman of prayer. She's a great listener, and she's a wise person. And we can connect you. If you'll just email me at phil@walkthrough.org, I would love to connect you with Judy Huber. Ellen and I were just on vacation and sitting around a pool in Hawaii and talked to a lady we've met several times before, and the woman is going through deep grief right now, and we're getting to connect her with you, Judy. And I think the way that you have opened your heart, even after losing Ron, and expected more of God, not less, not, well, I guess I don't know who I am anymore, but you found your identity primarily in Jesus Christ. It's a beautiful motivator for each of us. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us. If I gave you the last word, which I love to do because your words are better than my words, what would you say, not talking to me right now, but to those who are listening who are going through a time of loss, not sure, they're not as far, it's still the fog of that initial grief. I remember my dad, when my mom died, one day he goes, I just realized I'm not grieving full time anymore. Mm-hmm. But some who are listening to us are in that where I mean, grief is always like that app on our phones running in the background that it's draining our battery and we don't even know that it's on. But especially for those who are deep in the throes of grief, they're walking through the valley of death's dark shadow. What would you say to them?
It sounds very simple. But I can tell you for a fact that you will have joy in your life. Joy returns. It's different, but it's a great joy because you're going to depend on God. You have to depend on God for your everyday experience, and you're going to grow closer to the Lord. And joy does return. You will have joy in your life. You know, God doesn't leave us. He doesn't drop us. He's there. He's always there. It's us that drop the Lord. You know, we don't reach out. We don't ask. So you just have to get down on your knees and just ask God, what do you want me to do? How are we going to go through this? I mean, there were many mornings I would wake up and I'd say, okay, God, what are we doing today? Because I didn't know what I was supposed to do. But by the grace of God, He gives you the courage and the confidence to go forward. And there is joy. It does return.
As I was listening to you share your story, Judy, I've in my mind right now clear pictures of three people that I need to share this with after we get it done. Mm-hmm. And I hope everyone who is listening that, you know, we need this for ourselves, but you know somebody else who needs to hear this story and this message of hope. And I hope that you'll share this with them. It's why I wanted to start Step Into the Story, because God wants to be intimately involved in the story of our life, and He wants to take us and then use us strategically in His epic story that's so much bigger than us. And Judy, thank you. You live that out on a daily basis. And I'm so honored to call you my friend. Thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for the Step Into the Story podcast, powered by Walk Through the Bible. We'd love to hear what you think by giving us a review on iTunes or Google Play. Also, don't miss a single episode by clicking the subscribe button. If you'd like more resources to help you explore and live God's Word in your daily life, visit walkthrough.org. That's walkthrough.org. Walk Through the Bible. Take a walk. Change the world.